Today, we are covering Before Sunrise. Follow two philosophy majors wander around the city of Vienna and talk about life at its deepest root, entranced in romance. Coming up on Haven't Seen It. Haven't Seen It with Tim Sestito and Tommy Tevenay. Hello, everybody. Welcome on in. Thank you all so much for listening today. This is a podcast where one of us is watching a movie for the very first time. And today, that is myself. Tommy, I know you watched this like a couple months ago, fairly recently. So it's still new. It's still fresh. It's not some certified classic that we've been holding out on. Do we have any more of those? Like, do we have any more of those movies in our bag that we're just like, oh, bro, this movie, I saw it when I was 15. It was the greatest thing ever. Like, I feel like
we're slowly getting to the point. I mean, we already got to that point very early on where, like, I watched Basic Instinct, and then, like, a week later, I was like, we gotta cover Basic Instinct. So, unless we're getting to, like, the point where, like, we start covering some of the horror movies that, like, are probably trash to trash. Like, I just recommended Final Destination. We gotta cover that when the new one comes out. But other than that, we're getting towards the bit over, like, yeah, both of us haven't seen this classic, so why don't we see this instead?
Which is cool, which is like, I feel like where the podcast was heading. I feel like there will always be movies. We were talking about our schedule for March before we started recording, and we were talking about, I don't want to say it yet, because, like, I don't know if it's 100% locked in, because we're both like, oh, like, that'd be fun, I guess, but it's one of those movies that you knew a guy in college. It's the Boondock Saints, but you knew a guy in college or high school who was like, this is the greatest movie ever. And then you watch it and you're like, I guess that's fun, because you're going to watch it in like a dorm room with like seven guys backed in there. And you're like, that was kind of fun, I guess. And then you just forget about, like, I couldn't tell you anything that happens in the Boondock Saints. Like, I don't remember a thing about it.
Yeah, like it might be cringy on rewatch.
I feel like it's a movie that hasn't aged particularly well, and I feel like when Tommy and I just trash on movies, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for me. I'm hoping for the listeners at home, it's a lot of fun for you. So,
well, it's funny when it's like a movie that people end up loving. Like when we covered Perks of Being a Wallflower, and then I've had like multiple people say, like, yeah, that's one of my favorite movies, and like you guys trashed it. I was like, well, I don't know what to tell you. That movie sucks.
He sucks as though I love I that is I think of all the movies we've covered, there's movies that I've liked that you haven't, there's movies that you've liked that I've haven't. I feel like The Perks of Being a Wallflower is the only movie we've ever covered where both of us are like, yo, this is trash.
Yeah, this is garbage.
And Dracula, but I don't even like count that as a movie. That's more of a like
historical piece at this point, because it's like almost 100 years old.
It's closer to the Civil War. It's closer to like the Civil War than we are to today, or some weird, crazy fact. So, yeah, we're cooking up some stuff here. Before Sunrise, despite my, I felt like I needed for the intro, because I like to do something weird with the intro. You like to just put the word podcast in some quote in this movie.
Yeah, I like to be lazy with it.
You like to be lazy with it. I feel like I wanted to just give the air, like, I liked the movie, but there definitely is an air of pretentiousness to it, and I feel like I was able to embody that. If you knew nothing about the movie, you might be like, huh, this is for prissy pants. And we're gonna cover the movie in depth here. I got a full list of quotes to talk about, because this movie is just people walking around Vienna and talking and kissing sometimes and stealing a bottle of wine and playing pinball just horrendously, like horrible pinball.
Awful pinball, yeah.
just terrible. But Tommy, what, like, when you first saw this movie, what made you feel like this would be a great movie to cover on the pod?
Well, I first watched this because someone was tweeting about the record shop scene a few months back, and I was like, all right, I need to get around and watch this movie. So I watched it, and it just filled me with a sense of like romantic wonder in a way. I mean, I'm in relationships, so it's not like I'm like aching for like a romance or anything like that, but it still just reminded me of like that period of like you were talking before we started recording how this felt like the ultimate movie you would have watched when you were 20. And it kind of brought me back to that mindset in a way of just like the achiness of just like this one perfect night of someone that like you're never gonna see again or anything like that. And I was like, okay, we got to cover this. We haven't covered much Richard Linklater in general, I feel like, on the pod, if at all.
I feel like the problem is we've seen a lot of Linklater in our lives.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, Days of Confused, obviously we both rewatched over and over and over
School of
again.
Rock, we've watched over and over again. Like there's, yeah, I've heard about this trilogy for years. It just always, it's a tough one to follow. Fine, because I feel like this would kill if it had like a proper Netflix placement. You know what I mean? Like people would
Oh, yeah.
on Netflix and just be like it would get the Suits treatment. Like, do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, basically like a revival of like an old series or something. And
Yeah.
the fact that there's a trilogy of these movies, I mean, we still both haven't seen the sequels yet, so this is just our thoughts on Before Sunrise, the first of the trilogy. But I'm really excited to check out the other ones in them.
Yeah, I watched this with my girlfriend and she's like, yeah, I mean, I would watch the sequels, but I need like a couple months hiatus before I go back into it. But we'll cover it here coming up shortly. Tommy, what have you watched lately? Anything in the theaters? Anything at home? Anything just worth shouting out about?
Yeah, so there's been a specific type of movie I've been watching recently that I've tweeted about on our Twitter, called the Yuppie Nightmare type of movie, where I'm talking about movies like Pacific Heights, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Unlawful Entry. I specifically watched Pacific Heights and Unlawful Entry. These are movies where like Pacific Heights is essentially this yuppie couple played by Matthew Modine and Melanie Griffith. They buy a new house in San Francisco and they need to rent out one of the rooms to a tenant. And the tenant is Michael Keaton. And Michael Keaton's a real scumbag that's gonna basically cause them to get like all these different like trouble with the law and stuff like that, and like fuck up their apartment and make their rent really stressful for them. And just a really fun thriller that we don't really see like with that anymore. There's like a period of the 90s where like there's so many movies like this. Like Fatal Attraction definitely kicked it off. We covered that in the pod before. But just the Yuppie Nightmare, it just feels like such a fun, like throwback type of thriller. I mean, even Unlawful Entry is a movie where like basically Kurt Russell is a married is in a relationship. He's married to his wife where they have a break-in in their house, and then all of a sudden the cops come, and one of the cops is Ray Liotta. And Ray Liotta is like, hey, you gotta get security in here. And he slowly becomes obsessed with the married couple in a way that he starts unraveling their lives, like starting playing evidence on them for like cocaine and shit like that. And like becomes violent towards them and shit like that. It's just such fun, pulpy adult thrillers that we never get anymore. I mean, what's the most recent example of something like that? I can't even think of one.
Like a fun adult thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you've got me. I was gonna say Boner Jams 03, but like that's just made up from the 40-Year-Old Virgin. You know, that's not real. It is like a dead genre. Are these movies like you mentioned Fatal Attraction? Does it have that like sex thriller to it as well in these yuppie thrillers?
Oh, definitely these yuppie thrillers have a little bit of like, the rock thriller type stuff, like, even Basic Instinct, which I rewatched recently. And there's always just like a certain like aspect to these movies that just feels like just noirish type of fun, no lie.
I feel like a big reason for this is, they were rampant in the 80s and 90s, like with those cultural tastes in there. With the ease of adult entertainment on people's devices, they just no longer need that from Hollywood. They don't need the sex from movies the way that they do. I see so many people who are tweeting being like, oh my God, it is just disgusting. There's nudity here. I remember when Oppenheimer came out, I saw like I assume Mormon couple or something like that, where it was like, we were watching Oppenheimer, and when the nudity happened, I put my hand over my husband's eyes just to make sure, and I'm like, what?
This is like when we realize that some people are a lot more sheltered than we are.
Yeah. So it, you know, And I it, obviously it's not on a mass scale. Like most of the responses are like, "Are you kidding? Like, why would you post this? This is just embarrassing." But I think the point is people don't. I feel like the 2000s, like the sex they got, just came from like The Sopranos in terms of like mass popular entertainment. And then like we 2010s we kind of got Game of Thrones, but by the time everybody got an iPhone, they don't need it. They don't need it from Hollywood.
Yeah, game
They
over from that.
don't need it. They don't need it anymore. You know,
Well, even then, like even if you take away like the whole sex aspect, I mean, Pacific Heights isn't really as much a sex slur as the other ones that I mentioned, but like it's just we don't have mid-budget m movies like this anymore. I mean, you talk about comedies before, you talk about it with like even just like straight up dramas where Pacific Heights is just a couple gets terrorized by Michael Keaton. There's no big budget car crashes or anything like that. It's just this one actor cooking the whole entire time.
I mean
Yeah.
that sounds fun. I love Michael Keaton. Anything
And
he's in, I'm just I'm in.
he's a fun villain. He's a great villain in that movie. I mean, it's a 3 out of 5, but it's a fun 3 out of 5, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Listen, it's you know, there are movies that are like 2.5 out of 5 that I enjoy much more than like a 4 out of 5. You know, like
Yeah.
Children of Men is like the epitome of that movie where you watch it, you're like, wow, that's great. This is haunting. I never fucking want to watch this movie again. Versus like versus something like old school. Like I had a wedding this past weekend and I threw it onto the couch, like just lazy Sunday, just like I'll watch some old school. And like there's some hilarious parts. Is it some masterpiece? No. But if I had to choose between, like, we talked about The Brutalist last week or old school, I'm probably just gonna watch old school, you
Yeah.
know?
Exactly. I mean, like that's with me with like so many horror movies where it's just like, yeah, I know that most Jason movies are pieces of shit, but I'm having so much fun while I'm watching this.
Your love of Friday the 13th, we've never once covered one on the
Yeah,
podcast.
so we were talking about like movies we loved when we were 15. I guess that's our on one untapped mind where like we just have not covered
You have
Jason.
the I feel like I tend to lean towards more like dramas,
Yeah.
like more
Not
like historical
shit.
piece, and you're more of like I'm just like the day you come to me and be like, we need to cover Leprechaun 3, I'm gonna be like, let's just end the podcast. It's over. It's done. Like
Yeah.
if
Thankfully,
we're
I have not seen any Leprechaun movies, so I will not be recommending them unless I watch Leprechaun 1 and I'm like, yo, Jennifer Aniston's in this movie and she's amazing. That's all I know about it. And Warwick
I
Davis is the Leprechaun. I mean, you have to buy the shtick there.
mean it's a shtick for sure.
Yeah.
A movie that I saw that I believe you saw as well. I went into the theaters and I saw Companion. It's the Jack Quaid movie with his artificial intelligence girlfriend, and they're in a weekend in the woods, and they were basically going to use her to frame a murder of this girl of his friend's girl's guy, and she finds out about it, and then it's just a hunt to kill her, and it's a. Is it a good movie?
I had a fun time with it.
I don't think so. It was literally just the conversation we were having about
Yeah.
like a fun 3 out of 5 versus like a 4.5 out of 5 where you feel like shit after watching it. This is a fun time. I want Hollywood to make more stuff like this. Like this is
Well,
fun.
literally, like we were just talking about, I mean, this is the definition of a mid-budget movie. This was $10 million and it has a couple of stars you've heard of before, like Jack Quaid and Harvey Guillen from What We Do in the Shadows. And it's just like, we're in this like remote lakeside cabin and then crazy shit happens. It's a high concept sci-fi movie, but the budget in it is not
It's like
reflective.
high concept sci-fi horror, like a blend of the two, which I feel like is always a good blend of it. And
Yeah.
it's sci-fi, but it's based in reality. Like the future that it's picture depicting is not super far off from where we are. There's people buying dolls already. They just don't have like voice calibration chips. sad world. But I enjoyed it immensely. It's still in theaters. If you're looking for something fun to do on a Friday, Saturday, you'll have a good time. That's all I'll say. It's not going to reshape your world or the way you feel about movies, but you will have fun watching it. Also, Jack Quaid on a bit of a run right now. Have you noticed that he's got another movie that he's the leading man in, like the action movie where he can't feel any pain and he has to save his girlfriend. Like he's on a heater right now.
I mean, between that and like he had that Scream movie a couple years ago, he
He
was
was
in
in Oppenheimer
Oppenheimer.
for a hot minute. He's playing the bad guys in Oppenheimer.
Literally. Best part. But again, like it's just like good to see like a movie like this getting a theatrical release. I'm glad that's doing okay. I mean, it's gotten like 33 million, but that's on a 10 million budget, so I feel like that's probably good for them at
Yeah,
this point.
it's probably right near turn. It didn't have a ton of marketing behind it. You know, the rule of thumb is usually it's usually 50 to 100% of what the production was. It's what they're going to sink into marketing. And maybe it just doesn't hit my social feeds and I don't really watch cable unless baseball or football's on. So.
I mean, I only saw this, knew of this because of like a trailer before another movie I saw. But I mean, Sophie Thatcher, she's on a little bit of run too. I mean, I haven't watched much of Yellow Jackets outside the pilot, but I mean, she's like, I think the breakaway star from that, right?
Yeah, I don't even know what Yellow Jack. I've heard of Yellow Jackets. I don't even know what network it's on. So, or streaming app. Or, it's all too confusing. Just
Yeah, it's a lot.
bring me back to TNT movie days where you're just scrolling and you just come across the social network. Oh, I will say, I got home one night, put on my TV, and it was like halfway through Moneyball, which we covered. Great episode. Find it, scroll down, listen to Moneyball. But I was just enamored and I just ended up watching the whole thing. Oops. Great movie. Great
That's the
movie.
definition of a TNT movie right there.
Oh, yeah, definition of a TNT movie. But a movie that's not really a TNT movie is Before Sunrise.
I have no idea what your situation is, but I feel like we have some kind of connection.
Yeah, me too.
So listen, here's the deal. This is what we should do. You should get off the train with me here in Vienna and come check out the town.
Since we're never going to see each other again, I don't think we should sleep together.
Let's see each other again. Castle Rock Entertainment presents Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy in a new romantic comedy from Richard Linklater. Before Sunrise, rated R. At select theaters Friday.
That's so interesting because I just saw TV spot before I downloaded it. I didn't listen to it. The fact that they called it a romantic comedy, because I would not, I don't know where the comedy is in this movie.
There's like some sweet moments in between, like, you know,
There's
the phone scene, but like, this is more of like a romantic, like,
this is more just a straight
drama.
rom I would just call it a straight romance movie.
Yeah,
I would
exactly.
not call it a rom. I mean, obviously they're designed to sell, but that's just a very interesting definition of
I
this movie.
love how much more 90s that felt in that trailer. Like,
Oh yeah.
the random song in there just felt like the most generic 90s song they could find.
That was on 95.5 WPLJ. If you're an old head in New York, you know exactly what I'm talking about, the adult alternative channel, but on the radio. But it's so it's this is such a strange movie to this is different than any movie we've talked about because this is literally just a conversation. That's what this movie is. It's one linear conversation with some interactions between people. It definitely can feel a bit pretentious, but there's 100% of magic in this movie. Like you were alluding to before, where you said it's that romantic whimsy. It's that thing that you chase your whole life for, like especially if you're 20 and you're like you're planning to travel abroad or whatever. Like that one night with one stranger where you fall in love, but you'll never feel again. It's like it's a concept that's so straight out of a movie. And then they were just like, well, what if we just made it out of a movie?
Yeah, I mean, this is basically based on something that happened to Richard Linklater, where he spent a night walking around in Philadelphia with this woman named Amy, and you know they were just like talking and like everything like that. They spent the whole night. Linklater stayed in touch with this girl for a little bit, and then contact was lost. He never heard from her again, and they didn't find out until 2010 that the woman Amy died in a traffic accident before this movie even came out. It's
Oh
just a real
shit.
tragic thing. So like one of those things where it's like the love of his life, he's like all of a sudden like, oh, she died even before I made this movie that's essentially about her.
He might have died like while they were in this communication period. So I think changing the setting from Philadelphia to Vienna. Smart decision. I don't really view Philadelphia as a
You
romantic.
can't imagine a romantic version of this movie in Philadelphia. Just, I mean, you could get away from New York for sure, but Philadelphia would be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Could you? I don't think you can. I don't think you could get away with any American city. I don't think you can. Like,
Well, I think there's a part of this movie that makes it feel like magical and whimsy is the fact that it's in a place like Vienna that just feels so like mystical in a way for
it's
Americans. When
all.
you're out abroad too and you're traveling, you're just so much more uninhibited. You're so much more willing to do experiences like this. Like, oh, like, sure, let's talk this right in person and let's do this.
Like I, it almost makes me wish we had our good friend Martin on the podcast right now. You know, he's from London. He's on the Film Versus Film podcast. Like, if we had him on and we're discussing this, being like the question I would ask him is being like, would a city like New York, like, does a city like Vienna do it for you, or like, is it just like, oh, that's just another city? Because we have nothing, you know, we have nothing that was built 800 years ago, 1,000 years ago. There, we have cities that are 250 years old, and they're n none of them have the identity of what they once had. And I think it's very curious, like, to think of that European perspective of like, would they prefer it if they just like walked around Central Park, Upper West Side, East Village, Bidai, like would that
Well,
bring more of a whimsy to it versus?
I speaking of Martin himself, I was going through some Letterboxd reviews of this movie before, and I did see Martin give this a really good Letterboxd review. But the one thing about this movie is that like it really just like the strength of this movie and like whether or not you're gonna like this is how much you like the two performances. Because if you hate one of these people, you're not gonna like this movie whatsoever.
Yeah, I see. I disagree with you there. I think like this is, they kind of talk, they talk a, they don't, you don't, you get a bit of a sense of who these people are before they had met, but it explores much more about life from a philosophical standpoint than it does like who these people are at their core. And at their core, there's clearly a, for these characters, there's clearly like an interest of life and these big questions here. But I think if you've ever kind of been on a date before, it's a little like you're not really flirting with philosophy, you know? That's, it's usually like some jokes and stuff like that, like
Icebreakers more often and stuff. Yeah,
icebreaker,
exactly.
you know, like there's none of that. It almost feels like more of a friendship than a romantic relationship. Like,
Yeah, because
obviously.
I was thinking back to my own experiences. I don't know if I've ever had a romantic type of night like this, but I feel like I've certainly had nights like over my like past
You
few.
and I have talked about crap like this before.
Well,
Like,
no. I'm saying like there's been nights with like some random dude I met at a party and we hit it off and we're like we became bros, best bros or anything like that.
oh, I
And like
would.
you're like, yo, we're gonna hang out immediately, and then like we never saw each other again.
I was literally just thinking that like this is the thing where you meet somebody at a like, and I'm like, have I ever had this experience before? And it's like, yeah, with a dude where I have like an hour and a half, heart to heart, like lifelong conversation, like, oh my God, dude, like we're gonna be best friends, like this is, this guy is so deep, like I love this guy so much, and then just poof.
Well,
And
the great thing about this movie is that it's made at the perfect time because if this movie was made like 20 years later, it would have been like, okay, so let's just add each other on
we can
Facebook.
and we can FaceTime every night, like
Because
it's
like those experiences, I'm sure there's people on my Facebook friends list that were like some drunk asshole I met at a party once
oh,
and never interact with them again.
I very rarely go on Facebook, but like the past times I have, like I'll be scrolling through and I'm just like, who are these people?
Yeah.
Where, how do I know this person?
Yeah. Like
It's very.
the first night in college when you want to be friends with everyone and then like you become friends with like one guy that like 4 years later you're like, who the fuck are you?
Well, also we are dating ourselves for our younger audience, because our younger audience is like, who would actually friend people on Facebook? But you do not understand. Instagram came out the year I went to college, okay?
Yeah.
It was like, and up until my senior year, did it was it more of a like, oh, let me get your Instagram instead of like, yo, add me on Facebook, dude. Like, we added people on Facebook, and it was like Instagram being a little bit cooler, and then the rise of the boomers on Facebook that just was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good, bro. I'm good, dog. I don't need.
Yeah, when it got to the point my dad said, "Hey, friend me on Facebook or I'm going to ground you," I was like, "I don't like this platform as much anymore."
Yeah. I was thinking of the South Park episode with
Yeah,
the where he's like,
some Pokemon.
it's like he, Stan doesn't want a Facebook page. They make it for him. Hey, Stan, why haven't you accepted my friend request? Do you not like me or something? Dan, I don't want to be on there. Oh, okay. Fine, I'll add you. And thanks. Would you go and work on my farm? Perfect time capsule of like Facebook at that time, where now it's more just like garbage AI art and like fake stories that trick people. I don't know.
Yeah. But anyways, to get back to the movie, I mean, that's what kind of makes the ending to this movie so powerful for me, because I think Linklater himself has said that the way you take this movie is pretty much goes about your worldview. If you're romantic, you think they're gonna be back up together. If you're cynic, you're like, they never saw each other again. Like, despite the fact we know there's sequels, like, how do you feel about that?
I felt like when, because jumping ahead, it's hard to be like, oh, spoilers. Like, there's nothing to spoil in this movie. It's kind of
No.
blotted out for you. If you like very interesting conversations about life, discussions about life and where it's heading, and all these things going around, you will enjoy this movie because that's all this movie is about. And it's just a character movie. It's a bit of a hangout movie. Linklater is the master of hangouts. Like, that is what he does best.
There's no other better director, I think, at making a movie that's just about conversations and being the most interesting thing you've ever seen. Yeah, that's how I feel about Linklater.
Yeah, I feel like the movie that he has with the most plot is School of Rock. You know, he's not he do, that's not what he's after. That's not what he's chasing. You know, if you put yourself in the perspective of some small theater in 1995 watching this movie for the first time, that will question of we will meet again in 6 months will be weighing on you a lot. I feel like a part of it is kind of ripped from me just knowing that there's two more movies after. Like,
You're
kind of
like,
implied.
yeah. Well, I do know this the first sequel is like a 10 years later kind of thing where
Yeah,
they do touch upon
I
it.
think the second one is also another 10 years later kind of thing, because they're gapped 10 years from release of each other. I have a feeling that she goes and he doesn't, just because, or he goes and she does. I mean, obviously, what are the other options here? But I get the sense. So I watched the trailer for Before Sunset on Amazon, and he's on a book tour in Paris, and they connect there again. Like, that's how they connect again in Before Sunset. And I don't know. I'm more curious about that because I feel like this is what Linklater would do very well with something like this. And I'm obviously just hyped. Like, I feel like I would enjoy Before Sunset more than Before Sunrise, because now I am of the age of Before Sunset
Yeah,
that
it's kind of
grand
funny trilogy like that, where
yeah.
like it definitely ages with you. Where like, if you're an audience member in like 19, if we watched this in college, we would have so felt like more deeply connected to Ethan Hawke and Judy Dempley. And like, then 10 years later, oh, there's another one. And then there's another one. Oh my God, like they're going through their 30s now. Oh my God, now they're going through their 40s. And like, I wonder if they're gonna make a fourth one. I wouldn't be shocked to hear that if like they made one more like this decade or something like that.
It would
But
be interesting. I feel like a trilogy is kind of perfect for this kind of thing. Obviously,
exactly.
what the other ones are, and like how Before Midnight is left. But it's so very interesting to me that this ends up being a trilogy of movies. Something that, like, there's nothing else that exists in terms of a trilogy like this. Trilogies are like reserved for like action movies and blockbusters, and not like philosophical hangout movies. Like,
This might be the lowest grossing movie ever to make get a sequel. I don't have the stats up in front of me, but I mean, this one made 22 million. I mean, it's definitely up there.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it was against a budget of 2.5 million. I mean, that's what happens when you just film walking and talking. You don't need that much more.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big, in terms of like the gross off of it is probably pretty big, but I get your point there. Let's skew on the characters here because we haven't talked about Jesse, played by Ethan Hawke, and Celine, played by Julie Depley. Like, how did you feel about the characters? Obviously, both of us being men, I feel like we are probably more going to connect with Ethan Hawke's character, but like, how did you feel the characters came off? Like, and what did you really like about them?
I think that there's both just a in, like sweetness to both of them right there. Where like I think that it's the weird thing sometimes relationships, or even though this is just essentially one night of people, where they can kind of just become formed together, and you see the connection of them just forming together. But Ethan Hawke, just like I just love just how much like he's just willing to go over like his life and stuff like that, about how and maybe he wasn't loved as much and stuff like that, and like all these different things. And I love Julie Depley's thoughts about anxieties and life and death, and how she's thinking at every moment of her life about like what the last moment of my life is going to be like before I die. Like that whole monologue she has about like, I feel like sometimes I'm replaying every single moment of my life, and this is my life flashing before my eyes right now. And just how fucked up that feels, especially when you're younger, when like you still have your whole life ahead of you, the whole thought process. But it's just still just a almost effortless charm that Julia definitely gives off in this.
Yeah, I feel like there's a connection to some of the things that people would say where I feel like where I am in life itself, I'm almost a little bit past that. Like I'd rather have this conversation with someone I know well and like know intimately and like getting their perspective on things versus when you're 22, it's a lot cooler to hear these things from strangers and have that kind of strange conversation because you're just discover you're still such in a phase of discovery, like ultimate discovery. Like the sheltered part of your life is basically ending, and now the part of your life where you're, especially in like a modern contemporary, if you think of like grew up, you go to elementary, middle school, high school, college, graduate college. Now the world is an oyster. What do you take of it? Whereas where I am, I got a bit of the oyster. I got a bit of the taste in my mouth. You know, I understand it. I get it. We're kind of like I'm not trying to shit on this movie because I liked it. I liked it a lot. But it's a it's almost a desire of wishing I saw this at 22 because I feel like I would have had such a stronger connection to it.
I feel like in a way though it brought me back though to that time frame in my life, and maybe really connecting. And maybe it's the first time I watched it. I mean, granted, I did watch this the first time when I was working. The second time, watching my girlfriend, which is a much better experience. But I still really connected to this movie the first time I watched it, when like hearing all the different stuff. I mean, I just love the one line that Ethan Hawke says in this movie that says, it's the worst thing about somebody breaking up with you. It's when you remember how little you thought about the people you broke up with, and realize that's how little they're thinking of you. Like you think they're you're both in all this pain, but they're just like, hey, I'm glad you're gone. And that just hits. That's just like, oh my God. What a deep philosophical thing. It's definitely a movie character moment where like I could see an Ethan Hawke type character saying that in real life, but it's still just like
I
it's
guess
me
I've
to a
never
core.
had a relationship end that way where it was more of a like I didn't feel, you know, it was a more of a we didn't feel like it was the right fit or, you know, from her, from whatever, versus like and any others that have kind of fizzled out or not deep enough for that connection of like a quote unquote breakup to ever feel that way. You know, personally. So maybe like again, maybe that's just a thing that like I've never felt like I've been dumped before by somebody that I was like longing over, and they were just like, yeah, I don't care about you at all. You know, I guess I've never like felt that feeling. I felt like there was definitely a shared pain. So I don't know. Again, it's just personal life experiences.
Yeah, personal life experiences, unfortunately, I could probably say I've had maybe a couple like that. But anyways, just like in general, I just love just like the different chemistry that they have together, and how much it just carries through throughout, and how much I mean, I could just watch this movie for like hours on end. I feel like it's definitely rewatchable for me. I mean, this is my second watch, and the whole entire time I was so excited just to be back in this world. That's why I can't wait to watch these sequels too.
Yeah, I definitely there's definitely a part of it that feels that definitely feels rewatchable to it. I am kind of curious to revisit it on a rewatch and kind of see what parts absorb me most. I mean, it's a lot of just set pieces of walking and talking.
Well, if we want to talk about one set piece in particular, I think there's one standout moment, and this is the moment that made me want to watch this movie. What someone posted about on Twitter was when they're in the record shop together, and
Literally, when I saw that part, I was just like, "Oh, this is Tommy's Nirvana." Any movie that has
but
record in it, it's like,
no, not just because of the record shop moment, but like just like the moment where like they're flipping through the records, they find this one record by this artist Kat Bloom that I've actually met a couple times before. She's like a local Connecticut legend, where she plays at a lot of the shows at the venue I work at. So I've interacted with her before. She's like a woman in her like 60s or 70s at this point, but she's this folk artist and never got her due. And then she had a little bit of a revival because of this. But anyways, I just love that scene so much. I mean, I remember I was talking to this with my girlfriend when we watched it. We're like, you just watch that one moment where they're in the listening booth together. It's so cramped, and at that moment, you just want to scream at the screen. And I think I did the other night. I was like, just fucking kiss already. Because it's that weird awkwardness where you're not sure at that moment if like
Yeah,
it's the right moment.
I called them. I was like, I was yelling at the screen, like, "You pussy, just fucking do it." You know what I mean? And
Because they're both looking at each other like they're both like doing that like awkward, like quick glance thing.
they were doing the thing where like one looks and then no one does it. I'm just picturing Linklater behind the camera, just being like this, like probably has the song playing over the speakers or whatever, and goes like this, okay, Ethan, right hand is you, Julie, left hand is you. When I do that, just make an awkward look, okay? Go. And it's just duh, 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 okay. And then just okay, like right, left, right. Like I felt there was definitely a tempo to it. It's a very interesting, it is a very good scene. I really liked the, because one thing that was starting to not irk me, but it was like they felt they're very, very agreeable, and naturally people you're in love with are you're going to be agreeable with. But the gypsy scene where the gypsy does comes along and does the palm reading, right? And Julie Delpy has her palm reading about her being a powerful woman and what she's going to do in her life. And Ethan Hawke is very, very against it. Like, he's just like, you just got scammed out of money. Like, that's how I see it. Like, this person just took you for a ride, versus like for me, like there's one part of my brain that goes like, yeah, if a gypsy comes walking to your table at a cafe in Austria at night to read your palm, it's probably just a scam. But also there's another part of me that goes, for 50 shillings, I also everything in this movie cost 50 shillings, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that, but literally
I did not notice that part.
I just noticed like everything they go into, it's like 50 shillings, 50 shill. I don't know how, like, I'm guessing this clearly predates the euro becoming very centralized in Europe, and these countries still having their own currencies. But I'm like, what is 50 shillings? Like what? I didn't understand the pricing of it. It's like 50 shillings, like 50 cents, or 50 shillings, like $50. Like, I'm guessing it's more on the 50 cents side of things, but I digress. And they had like a little bit of a rift on it. Like, do you feel like this movie needed a conflict?
No, and I feel like that's why this movie, why I loved it so much, is that they didn't feel the need to have them have a sudden fight, like a real fight, other than that, and like, other dramatic stakes like that. I mean, I feel like we're so carried by just the two of the actors at the same time, just being together and being in love and falling in love, that I feel like any conflict like that in the middle of it would just ring dramatic. Like they need a dramatic thing to keep
Faux
it up.
drama. Like,
Faux drama, yeah.
if this was not some independent production and it was more of a studio picture, there would be some fight where he storms off or she storms off or whatever, and then you know the song that's coming on, the dun 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 dun.
Or like the fray or something like that, like how to save a life or something like that.
Not what?
They
It's a
definitely use the
song about death.
I pre well still
It's a
I'm pretty
song
sure
about
they've used that in
suicide. It's a song
rom-com, or
about suicide.
The fray in general, I'm sure that it's been used. I'm sure that's been
A
used.
crappy adult alternative from the mid 90s to the mid 2000s. Like, I get it. Like, I was thinking Goo Goo Dolls, to be honest. But, that kind of song coming on, and like he's moping around, it starts to rain or whatever, and they're just both like.
And then they're crying in the rain or
And
anything like that.
some they yell right before he turns around, like, yeah, I guess if you ever want to see me again, I'll be at the clock tower at 3 a.m. Dun, 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 dun.
And that's how I just love how the ending plays out, about how like more realistic it feels, like how they just like the first time I watched this movie, I was like sobbing at the end of just how realistic it felt of them just like touching each other and just like how they both were like, I don't want this to end right now. Like, come on, like we have to meet together again one more time. And it didn't feel like this like cheap little like Hollywood-esque play where it felt like you've been with these characters for so long that you feel their emotions, you feel why they feel so connected at that moment and how devastating it feels in a moment. Like, I don't want this to be the only time I ever see you in my life. And, granted, we know that there's sequels, but even in the moment, if you don't know there's sequels, I imagine even in 95, that probably hit even more. You're like, oh my God.
That's what I really do respect and like about this ending, is it's so open-ended. Like, will he go? Will she go? Do they both go? Do neither of them go? Like, I don't, like, there's a lot of options there. Despite, like, in that situation, you're gonna say, like, we'll see each other again. Like, I'm kind of like they didn't take phone numbers. I'd be like, if I was Ethan Hawke, I know I was gonna go to Vienna again. Like, I would be like, hey. Like, let's get a phone call like a month out. Let's like we don't need to talk for a while, but let's just be like, hey, straight up, are you gonna go? I get it. It ruins the match. That's just my logical brain coming in. That's just me being like, I'm being too nitpicky. I don't, you know me. I don't like, I don't like the cinema sins, the like, of it.
Well, there's one thing about this movie in general that like just captures how fun it is sometimes to just walk around a city of someone. I mean, like some of my favorite memories in New York City are just the days where I had nothing planned. I was like, I'm just gonna walk from point A to point B and see where it takes me. And especially if you're someone else in that moment, you're just walking around and you're encountering like random characters in that moment. I mean, it's not obviously as cinematic as I'm not about to talk to two random guys about their cow play, which. What was that? I mean, like, if there's a moment of this movie you wish you could have seen, it would have been like, how weird was that
Yeah, I
cow
was kind of curious. I was like, I kept thinking about like, are they gonna go to this cow play? And then
play?
up, like at the very end, like, oh, we missed a cow play. I was like, oh, they didn't have the budget. They didn't have the budget for it.
That cow play would have been too much.
So Julie Delpy actually said a very interesting thing. She told Creative Screenwriting that Ethan and I basically rewrote the entire script as we were going around. There was an original screenplay, but it wasn't very romantic, believe it or not. It was just a lot of talking rather than romance. Richard hired us because he knew we were writing and he wanted us to bring that romance to the film. We brought those romantic ideas, and that's how I wrote something that actually got made without really getting credit for it. But if I had written Before Sunrise and had been credited, then I doubt I would have been it would have been financed, which is that's a very interesting play. The other screenwriter, Kim Krizen, disputed Delpy's claim. The actors rewrote the entire script. But in the sequels, Delpy and Hawke are credited for co-writing the sequels. I'm kind of curious, like it definitely I feel like we haven't really talked about Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. And you know what? I think it's just time that I play the sound drop because we're gonna be on this one for a while here.
I am a star. I'm a star, I'm a star, I'm a star. I am a big, bright, shining star.
So I feel like me playing the sound drop is just so that we have the sound drop. I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like this is one where I like you. I don't think you can pick one. It's a yin and yang, it's a yin and a yang situation. Like
If
neither
one of
of
these people like sucked, this movie would have been awful. I mean, granted, this is IMDb trivia, so take it for a grain of salt. But
them.
apparently, like Gwyneth Paltrow and Jennifer Aniston audition. I don't know how true that is, but like if you had like someone like that, or like you had so much baggage with them, like, it would be like, oh God, and it'd just be like another generic rom-com or something to have Jennifer Aniston in the role or something. It wouldn't have been nearly as sweet.
Well, you, yeah, I can't picture. Yeah, there's a gentleness in both Hawk and Delpy's performances that comes through. That's just like, portraying naivete, right? Like there's a naive, like they have life experience, they have thoughts about life, but just in their performances and towards romance, and just like we hear about their past relationships. Like the reason Ethan Hawke is in Europe is he went to go visit a girl, his girlfriend in Madrid, and she had basically just not told him that the relationship was over. And he got there, and then he just basically spent the rest of the time on the Euro rail. And then the night before he leaves, he meets Julie Delpy and, makes a magical night out of it. I feel like where it's like, we usually in this segment, who did we think gave the best performance? But I don't think you can definitively say one gave a better performance than the other. I feel like it is perfectly yin and
Well, yeah, I mean, you could definitely see like what Julia Depley is saying about like the screenplay right there. Where like I would not be shocked whatsoever if there's a lot of improv on this set, if there's a lot of just like going back and forth. I mean, and like they definitely wrote some of their own lines at some points about anything, because it feels very authentic to both of them. I mean, these feel like real people. I mean, I definitely interacted with some Ethan Hawkes back in the day in their early 20s
yeah,
of guys like
absolutely.
that. And it's so funny, like some of the Letterboxd reviews on this are like give it 1 star, be like, Ethan Hawke, stay away from Julie Depley, like you scumbag, you scuzzball. It's like, what? Like, how are you taking that away from this movie?
Yeah, I didn't really get scumbag vibes from him.
He's not like his character in Reality Bites, a movie that you totally remember.
Is that the Ben Stiller one?
That's the Ben Stiller one.
Yeah, no.
Where like his character in that is like the like douchey, pretentious guy, where it's like, oh, why are you
Oh,
going
that's
for her?
right. That's right. That's the
So
movie about him.
1 year later, we're coming to another Ethan Hawke movie, but I think you'll remember this one a little more.
Yeah, this one's much better than Reality Bites. That's the AIDS movie, right?
Well, one of the characters ha did one of the characters have AIDS? No, I don't think
Or
so.
is he just gay? I don't know.
He was just gay. He came out as gay. That's what it was.
Okay, yeah. It see that was I felt like that movie was that's a I feel like these are two apt comparisons because that's another pretty much a hangout movie. Like nothing really happens in Reality Bites. I feel like. Like this, like it's very interesting watching the directorial career of Ben Stiller because I just started Severance and it's terrific, it's fantastic. And then, like thinking back to Reality Bites, like I feel like he didn't get the gravitas of a good hangout movie.
It definitely was like the beginnings of a Stiller. I mean, I still liked it. I think I gave it a good review if I remember correctly, but
Yeah,
it's definitely it's leagues. It's
you
this is
just.
leagues above it.
Listen, you're easy. You just love movies, man. Like you just love them
I
and
like Winona Ryder. I like the soundtrack. I got into Peter Frampton for a couple of months after we covered that.
not a bad groove to be in. Do you agree with my assertion though of like there was no one performance better than the other?
I agree. It's very symbiotic in this case, where both of them just are so great. Again, their monologues, there's no weak link between the two of them. I mean, this is a rare case where we'll say who won the movie or who's the star. We say both of them.
Yeah, and it and it's interesting because the movie could not work any other way. Like you have to almost you need the two to become one, and that's what they ultimately do by the end of the movie.
It's interesting of the two that Ethan Hawke, I mean, like obviously he's had a career. We've covered a couple of his movies, like Training Day before also, and he's still definitely relevant to this day. But Julie Depley, I mean, she definitely is known as like a kind of like an indie queen in a way, but she's never really broken out in a way. You're not gonna see, she was in Avengers apparently, the second one. I had to Google what the character was. It was like the woman.
She was in the Avengers?
She was in Age of Ultron apparently, and when I just Googled the character, and it was like the person that was the head of the Red Room, like Black Widow's training area. Again,
I don't even know. I don't even
if I
know
didn't
if I've
Google it,
seen. I don't even know if I've seen that one, dude. I don't
but
even care.
regardless, it's a part that like I had to Google who it was. She was not a memorable part of that movie, for me at least, and she's not someone that was popping up in blockbusters in very big roles like Ethan Hawke was.
Yeah, no, Ethan Hawke definitely had the bigger career of the two of them. Also, just because you mentioned Marvel. you mentioned the evil words. I do feel like I saw whatever the Harrison Ford one that's coming out with. I saw some screen grabs from that movie. Oh my God, it looks like, I can't comment on the movie, I haven't seen it, but I can comment on screen grabs. Oh my God, it looks like garbage. Like visually, it just looks cheap and terrible. That's all I'm gonna say. That's all I'm gonna say. Don't go see that. Go see anything else. Just don't go see that. I think we're in agreement on that. And now we get to have a very fun question.
Are you ready, comedy partner? Waka waka.
Would this movie work as a Muppet adaptation?
So, would this just be Kermit and Piggy walking down the streets of Vienna or ever?
So that's the obvious thought, right? But I was
Yeah.
also thinking, like, what if you just kept Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy and
But
everything else was a
everyone
Muppet?
loves Muppets.
Everything else was Muppets.
But they don't comment on the fact they're Muppets. They're just like, it's a part of
No,
their
they're
role.
just people. They're just people. But like,
Yeah.
imagine like Gonzo and Fozzie on the bridge, like talking about their cow play, and like that's funny. That is a funny thought. I think it could work. It might need to be less
Just.
romantic just because it's the Muppets, but I feel like that could work. Like a
Little zinnier
philosophical,
stuff.
like, dude,
Oh, like
if you were
imagine like a
hot, if you
gypsy
were hot.
woman or the palm reader comes up to him. It's just some like rent. It's like Miss Piggy in a
No, it's
full
not
on like.
Piggy, it's Janice. That's Janice.
Oh,
100,
yeah, that's Janice. Yeah.
it's 100% Janice. Yeah, I did see a I'd say I think I sent you this. I saw a reel of they did a TikTok casting of Twin Peaks as Muppets. She was like, when the female characters came up, she just kept being like, yeah, there's not a deep roster here. So it is tough when there's just like three female Muppets that we just have to recycle in some of these movies. It gets tough. It gets
Yeah,
tough.
after a while, yeah.
All right, Tommy, review time. Give me a score out of five.
This was a movie that on both watches I just loved everything about it. This is a great movie to watch with my girlfriend. I think if you're in a relationship, I highly recommend it. Watching it with your significant other. It just really feels like philosophical in the way you are in your early 20s and the way you connect to people and how one night could feel like the beginning of your whole life. And all that stuff. I cried at the end of this movie the first time I watched it, and it just really hit me in a way. I'm gonna go 5 out of 5. I love this movie. I can't wait to rewatch it
Wow.
more.
Oh, wow. 5 out of 5. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a really interesting experiment of just two people walking around having a conversation, having interesting conversations. I feel like I would have given this a 5 out of 5 if I was 22, but I'm not. I'm gonna give this a 4 to 5. Really good movie. Really great performances. Definitely worth the hype. Definitely one of those movies that like, it's one of those movies I feel like when you start getting more into movies outside of just the popcorn flicks that you hear about, and then once you actually like see it, you understand why. But 4 to 5, really good movie. Definitely recommend watching it. Watch it with your girl. Watch it with your guy. Watch it with your whoever, but watch it. It's a good movie. Definitely worth watching. All right, Tommy, any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We definitely gotta find more Richard Linklater movies to cover. But anyways, you can follow us on social media. That's at CNIT Pod. That's on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, your occasional thread, and our name on Blue Sky is Pod CNIT at bluesky.social. So check us out there too. And leave us a 5-star review. Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast really helps us out, helps us grow the show. And yeah, next week, are we still thinking of Albert Brooks? I know we were talking about that earlier.
Maybe it's. I think it's going to depend on the scheduling of things. We could do Albert Brooks, but I know we were talking about March. We got a really good March coming up too. Of we're definitely have Ghost and Sunset Boulevard locked in for March,
Definitely. Yeah.
and then maybe the Boondock Saints. Let us know on social media if you want to hit me directly. It's on Twitter. It's at Fire B. Epler, I believe, or it's Fire R. Manfred. It's either the old Mets GM or the current baseball commissioner. You'll find me there. You can tweet at me and I will reply to you. And if you want the Boondock Saints, just let me know and I'll give you like a tally mark and I'll tip my cap to you. But great episode, Tommy. Great conversation. Always love talking with you. Thank you all so much for listening today. We will see you next week.